Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. It's Jesse Green here at the control panels, and today I'm super excited about having a conversation about being the best that you can be, developing leadership skills, and building a wonderful team that can support you in your odyssey, in your quest to build a wonderful dental practice. Now, before I introduce our guest today, I want to share some news with our listeners. We are very pleased to be able to announce the launch of the Savvy Dentist app, which you can download from your favorite app store, whether it's the Apple App Store or the Google Play App Store. Please head across there and grab that. You can find access to all our content, our blogs, our podcasts, and we'll be adding a whole lot more features to that shortly. In addition, for newer listeners, please come across and join us in the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. And you can find that by heading across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And we've got tips, tools, trainings in there waiting for you. Now, our guest today is someone who I've been wanting to interview for quite a long time. He is the author of several books, The Transformation Challenge, Becoming Your Best, which is about 12 inspiring principles around highly successful leaders. And so these two books, I think, are incredible resources. And the author of these books, Steve Schallenberger, is our guest today. And Steve, welcome all the way from Salt Lake City in Utah.
Okay. It is a delight to be with you, Dr. Green.
Oh, man. Yes. It's really funny. You know, the first time someone ever called me Dr. Green, we had a phone call come to my house, and I was a very newly minted dentist, and someone rang looking for Dr. Green, and we actually hung up on them because we didn't know who that was. Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming on our program today. You've had a long, distinguished, rich career in the field of leadership, in the field of personal development and transformation. It's a wonderful field to be in, and I'm just curious to ask you, as we get started, over the years you've seen lots of things come and go, but what do you think are the main bedrock principles that have just remained solid throughout?
Okay, that's a great question, Jess, and maybe I can just give a little background on this, which helps give a little context to the answer. So I was raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there were 8 of us that lived in a 900-square-foot home, and my parents were divorced by the time I was 14, and I mean, they're great people, but, you know, things happen, and my wonderful mom was trying to raise 4 children, the others younger than me, and it wasn't easy. It was a poor, really poor household, and we were scrapping just to make ends meet. And my first job was in an Italian restaurant, bussing tables, washing dishes. And I worked for the Vallejo Garbage Company. That was an interesting job. And I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning, drive through the most dangerous part of town, and then wait in line for someone not to show up. And then I could take their job. But it paid well, and I was a young kid, and didn't know really a whole lot better about risk, but it was a lot of fun. And then when I was 16, I met my first real mentor that changed my life, Dave Conger. Dave was a successful real estate broker, and he helped me start seeing things completely differently. He was very successful, had 5 real estate offices throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. One day he had me come over to his house. Oh, he helped me at 16 formed my first company, Schallenberger Maintenance Company. And so, I mean, I'm having all these ideas that are bouncing around in my head, and I'm a young fellow, and I'm saying, wow, I can do this. And I go over to his house, and 2 Cadillacs sitting in the driveway of this nice, beautiful, long home looking over the bay. And each one has a personalized license plate, Conger 1 and Conger 2. I'm saying, are you kidding me? And all of a sudden I thought, oh man, things can be a lot different. And so he was so helpful to me. While I was going through college, I sold books in the Eastern United States and the South, and it was hard work, but I learned a ton. And so at 26, I organized my first marketing company, and at 27, bought my first company, which was a publishing company and a printing company. And within a couple of years, we had 700 employees. Many of those were sales reps, and they really asked the same question you just asked, Jess, is what makes it happen? How can I be among the best? Or a manager might come to me and say, you know, how can I be really one of the best managers? What do I do? And I'd seen things and had the chance to observe people and was on an exciting track of reading. And my discipline at college was accounting and a business minor. And so I'm thinking a lot about this. One of my college professors in organizational behavior was a fellow by the name of Stephen Covey. He had like 800 people in his class.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, wow. It was huge, but you know, everybody just said, oh man, this is cool stuff. And so I went up to Stephen and I told him I had this company and that I was forming an advisory board and wondering if he might be interested in working on it with me. And so he was on my board of directors for 17 years. And then I was on his board for 5 years. So I'm in this whole world of leadership. I'm thinking about what really makes a difference. So early on, what I decided to do was research and see if I could find the answer to that question. And so I interviewed over 150 CEOs around the world. I studied the lives of several hundred historical figures who have touched the world for good. They've touched all of our lives. And what I was looking for is what set them apart, the high-performing individuals, from everybody else. And what we discovered is that really these leaders weren't perfect, but what we found is that they all did 12 things in common. These things were the things that caused the excellence, and they learned to master those things. That's what set them apart. And so that's what I put in our book, Becoming Your Best, the 12 principles of highly successful leaders. There it is. And it's like anything else. You probably played sports of some type when you were growing up.
I did, yes.
At least in your glory days.
Yeah, exactly. I don't move around the tennis court as quickly as I used to. I used to cox rowing boats, and coxes tend to need to be small and light. And these days, I don't quite fit that category or description as well as I used to. But anyway, that's okay. So lots of sporting references. So tell me, what have you observed around sportsmen?
So just think about a sport. If you're going to get good at a sport, what do you need to do?
You need to practice.
Yeah, you need to practice. And that's how you get better and better, whether it's tennis or rowing, whatever. And that's exactly how it is with these leadership principles. And so it just happened that these individuals really got it. And so they're the type of things that can be learned. So as we go back and say, well, what are those things? Well, there are certain things that highly successful leaders do. And I kind of broken them down into three different categories, Jess. And here's what's interesting. You've already captured this. You know this firsthand as a dentist. That dentists, at least as we've talked with dentists here, and we've had the chance to work with some really cool dentists. I mean, they're awesome people. They're smart. They care about people. But when they go to dental school, they're there to learn how to be a great dentist, how to master their craft. But what I've noticed, and I don't know if this will ring true to your listeners, but they didn't teach how to be a great businessman.
Definitely not at all. And it's a glaring omission in the curriculum.
But that's where you come in. You're such a great resource. And that's really cool. I like that. You're helping them supplement that. But that's also what is helpful about the 12 principles. These are things that helps great leaders learn to get great results, and they can do it. So here are the three kind of different categories among the 12 principles. One is transformational leadership. Is we want to, the really best leaders look at themselves as somebody that is being transformational, leaving things better than when they found them, not transactional, which is kind of just checking the list, going through the motions. And so the principles are transformational leadership, transformational teams and relationships with have to do with building a culture and unleashing the potential of those that work with you to create excellence, and then transformational living, so that we live in a way that allows us to sustain excellence over a long period of time. We all have ups and downs, and if we're not careful, sometimes we can get out of balance and burn ourselves out. And so how do you really find this kind of balance? So I would say, in response to your questions, clearly one of the things highly successful leaders do is define the direction to go, the vision. They lead with a vision, and it is a very conscious thing. And so this is one of the distinct things that great leaders do, is that they lead with a vision.
I'd love to just ask you about vision for a second, Steve, because I think anyone who's read any of your work, Stephen Covey's work, and other people might be familiar with the concept of having a vision, but there are some people who say, I just want to be a good dentist. Isn't that enough? And so I'm just curious to ask you about that. And is that a common experience that you hear, or a common saying that you hear? And how do you create a vision? What's the practical steps to getting clarity around your vision? Because when people are in the day-to-day quagmire of whatever they're doing, sometimes it's hard to see the woods for the trees.
That's a really great question, Jess. And there's, of course, two different aspects on a vision. One, and remember, this is what leaders do. They lead with the vision. So of course, we lead our own lives, and that means we have a personal vision. That's the application. But we may lead a team or an entire organization, or it may be a family. We apply this same principle whatever we're doing, but they do vary. So for example, a organizational vision, a great test is, does the vision, and it should be brief for an organization so that people really know it. They can understand it and it touches them, but it should be brief. That's one of the characteristics. And it should carry a passion, a cause, and a purpose that people can rally around. So being a good dentist isn't sufficient. That's not what it's about. It's about changing people's lives. It's helping them be able to smile. It's be able to help them feel confident about themselves. So kind of wrapping some of those things then gives purpose to why we have this training, that all of a sudden a dental assistant says, man, I get it. I'm pumped to help people be happy and confident.
Yeah, indeed. I love that. I absolutely love that, because you're right. Because so many times you see, there's a great saying, and I don't know who to attribute this to. Steve, you might know better than me, but there's this great saying that some people die at 25, but they're buried at 70. And I've got no idea who said it first, but it's a wonderful saying, and it feels like the vision just kind of left them, and it just became one foot in front of the other for a long time. But I think if you've got that vision, it energizes you, it directs you, it compels you even to move forward with clarity, with purpose and passion. So once you've got that vision in place, what's the other attribute that a really wonderful leader might display?
That's a great lead-in. And by the way, one little tip on a personal vision, or even a family vision, may be slightly different. A good way to start this, let's say you're going to do a vision for your family, is to have the stakeholders, the children and your spouse, whoever that might be, or your partner, is have them start writing down. You can have a little meeting. What describes us? And what do we want to be known like as a family? And so we get all of those words down together, and somebody starts wordsmithing them, and then you pass it back out to your family, and it starts becoming real. And they say, oh, have you thought of this? And how about this? But I have seen some way cool family visions. On a personal one, a good way to consider doing it is a whole different lens. And that is by having a clean sheet of paper and just write down your roles in life. Most of us have six or seven major roles. Like, all of us share personal health, fitness, mental, spiritual, financial well-being. So there's these personal things. And when we have our own act together, when we are strong ourselves, it's much easier to be successful with other people in our lives or other things. And so that's one role. Another might be partner or spouse, another parent or child, another certainly professional. could be a dentist. Another aspect of that could be a business manager, or leader, or owner. Those are different roles, quite different. Another is civic. Once you have that, and then just write down, what do I see myself doing? What do I want to be known as in these areas? And you might think about your listeners, me, you, about our mentors, somebody that's really touched our lives. What were they like? I think about mine. Oh, my goodness. They were encouraging. They believed in me. They were upbeat. They were happy. They had a sense of humor. They were disciplined. They saw the best in people. Those are words that somebody can use for their personal vision. Say, and it's best generally to use I am rather than I hope to be or I seek to be. I am happy. I find the best in other people. I bring out the best in people. I am patient. I am kind. When somebody pulls in front of me, I am patient. And I say, they must have a real problem today. Lord bless them.
Yeah, indeed. I think patience might be one I could work on myself there, Steve.
Well, okay. So you asked about the next one, Jess. And so once you have, I like to think of it this way. And this is just language. Jess and I were talking about this before we started the interview today, just ways that we've learned, insights that we've gained. And it's great, isn't it?
It's really wonderful. And look, there's so many different little lessons that come up in life and often from places that I don't expect them to come from. I've had some good fortune in my life to meet lots of many interesting people like you. And sometimes it's an incidental conversation. And yeah, some of my mentors probably didn't even know that they were mentors to me, to be honest with you. But I've taken some of the things that they've shared and applied them.
It's one thing to go in the right direction. This is what we do. But it's also doing the right things. And so there are two other parts of the principles in this transformational leadership, and that is they manage with a plan. And a plan, the vision is the direction, but what are we going to do this year? And this is very important because that's what the plan is all about, and it comes down to annual goals. And once again, if you do them by your roles, it gives life to them. You see it differently, and you start creating balance and excellence. Balanced excellence across all the different areas of your life. So you look at your personal area and you say, okay, in 2018 and 2019 is coming up, how can I be healthy and fit? What does that look like? And this is where we're able to use our imagination and innovation for us personally or for our offices or for the people we work with. And this is where a leader uniquely starts creating a difference. They bring out the best in people by creating these opportunities. For example, I do 7,000 sit-ups and push-ups a year. It's just one way to stay fit.
Yeah, I love that.
And it's not so hard when you break it down into 12 months and so many per week, so many per day. It's kind of easy, actually. But I'm a grandparent. Before we knew what would happen, Jess, we had 6 children, 5 boys and a girl. And all of a sudden, next thing we know, we have 19 grandkids.
Oh, my goodness me. That's a big Christmas gathering at your house.
Yeah, well, it is at current levels when we, and they do, they all come together for a week, a couple of times during a year. That's 34 people in our house for a week. And it's a riot. But so this is the question. When do we get too old to work on becoming your best?
Never.
Never.
The day I take my last breath, I hope I'm still working on being better than I was today than yesterday.
Yay. Way to go, Jess. That's why you're so cool. You've got that great attitude.
But isn't that the game of life, really, in some ways, is to make today better than yesterday?
Yes, whatever
way that we can do that, and then tomorrow to be better than today. And that's really what we're aiming for.
Well, this is the whole idea, really. And so when we think about annual goals, and that's one of mine, right? It's one of the areas I want to be really a great grandpa. not a great grandpa, but a wonderful grandpa, right? Someday I'll be a great grandpa, but that's not happening yet. Not for a while. And so one of the things I'm saying to myself, well, what can I do 2018 to really be extraordinary? And these are the questions. This is the way we want to think, because becoming your best is both a mindset, but it's also a skill set. It's a way of thinking. And then that way of thinking, you say, what do I need to learn or do so that I can make it a reality? For you and me and our listeners here today, that's what we're saying is, how can we be extraordinary? What does that look like? And so as a grandfather, I said, okay, one thing I can do is write 4 postcards during this year sent from 4 different places in the world in my travels, and to each grandchild personally. So this year we started off in Peru and Machu Picchu, and I did a seminar in Lima, and then off to Machu Picchu. So guess what? One of the very first things I did.
19 postcards.
You got postcards. And each one, you know, this is one of the 7 wonders of the world. So on the postcard, I wrote, Dear Bella, or Dear Ginger, or Jocelyn, or Robbie, or Tanner, whatever it might be. This is one of the 7 wonders of the world, just like you are.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, thinking of you. Have a great day. We sure love you, Grandpa and Nana. Well, the next place we were at was Puerto Vallarta. So I'm off getting postcards. Next place was Singapore. I'm off getting postcards. And I just got back last week from Malta, and I got postcards. Now, you know, they're all in the mail. They get them. But just think, I don't know if that's a significant thing, but it's one thing I can do. And my guess is most of those grandkids will guard those over the years.
I think they will too. And I suspect, I could almost guarantee that long after, and I don't mean to put you in a grave early, Steve, but long after you're gone, they'll be cherished memories of Grandpa.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they'll become fables.
That's right. And it also raises their sight. So they've got postcards from Egypt. They're thinking, what the heck? You mean Egypt is out there, or there's Machu Picchu is there, or Malta? There's a place called Malta.
what a fantastic gift, though, because not only does it deepen your relationship with your grandchildren, it really, as you say, it lifts their vision. It exposes them to other worlds, to other countries, to other ways of thinking. And I think one of the great things in life is to be able to look up and to be able to just have a look around, because there is a lot of beauty in the world. There's a lot beyond our nose that we sometimes don't see or we don't explore. And life really is there to be enjoyed, to be savored, to be savored and to be explored. And I think what you're doing with your grandkids there is a wonderful, wonderful service for them.
Thank you. And they definitely have one from Australia already.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
We want them thinking about Australia. Australia is getting some really great press these days, by the way.
Is it? Oh, wonderful. Well, that's cool.
Oh, big time. There's a great article in The Economist last week. Australia had the cover sheet.
Oh, wow.
And like, I forget what it was, 27 years of growth. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, look, we like all people, we're quite proud of our country. Just as you guys are proud of your country and our other listeners will be proud of theirs, we're proud of our country. It's like everything, it's far from perfect, but by and large, it's a good spot. So we're very grateful. I wanted to ask you about, because you've spoken about transformational leadership, you've spoken about transformational teams and transformational living. I wanted to ask you, what do you mean by transformational?
Right. This is really an important issue, because this thought of being determined that you will be transformational changes your behavior. And so the contrast, it's helpful, Jess, to look at the contrast. Transactional is where you just show up and you just do the minimum. So our son, Rob, recently went into a shoe store. When he walked in, he noticed there were 3 clerks over talking together with their phones, their devices. They looked over And they said, if you need anything, call us.
Ouch, ouch, ouch.
And he took like two or three steps into the store and turned around and walked out. That's pretty dang transactional. You're there, you show up for work, but you may not make a big difference. Transformational is like what happened when he went to the next store and he walked in and a fellow walked up and he said, welcome to our store today. He said, we are so delighted to have you here. What can we help you with? How can we help you have a good day?
Isn't that wonderful?
So transformational is where you make a difference. You leave things better than when you found them. I think that's a good description of it. And that's transformational. And so this is an invitation for all of us to be transformational leaders where we lift, we build, we inspire to leave people better, to leave our organizations better, our children. And I mean, let's be frank about it. We have one shot at this and we might as well make our organizations really great. We might as well bring out the best in people. That's transformational.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I love the idea of just really making a difference to people's lives and everything that we do. I wanted to ask you about how to make rapid progress versus incremental progress. Because, again, you studied lots of people, and I wondered whether you had any thoughts about incremental progress versus quantum leaps and what you might see as a way to accelerate progress. I understand there's no shortcuts and that we're not trying to get something for nothing. We need to pay the price for success. We're all okay with that. But equally, how do we get to our destination as swiftly as possible?
Well, I'm only laughing because we talked about patience earlier, right? However, the application of these principles are extremely powerful, these 12 principles, because each one by themselves is really quite significant, but alone insignificant. Alone insufficient is a better way to say it. It's how they work together that can create this explosive power. So let me give a couple of examples of this. We had a fellow come, one of our signature seminars is a two-day breakthrough leadership conference where we go over each of the 12 principles in 2 days. One of the individuals that came was Zach. Zach was a health care insurance group, a small group. He was averaging 4 health policies per day. This was in October when he came to the Breakthrough Leadership Conference. We practice exactly what we just talked about, Jess. What's your vision? And he changed his vision to be far more inspirational than it was, not just to provide insurance, health insurance policies, but to really be a change agent that helped people, that served people better than anyone else, to bring them the best policies, the best coverage, so they could sleep at night. And then he set his goals. And the goal should be really specific. And in his case, he said, by December, this was October, by December 15th, I want to be doing 8 policies a day. Well, that was double. Well, the very fact, remember, mindset, skill set. First, you have to be able to think about it. Then you say, okay, what pieces do we need to put in place to make it happen? He called us on December 16th. He said, I want you to know now we have been averaging 12 policies a day. So he tripled his business. And now this is 2 years later. His business is, he has a whole new office. He has, I think, 7 times the employees he did. He's really growing. We have another client in Southern California. About 5 years ago, they were at $8 million in annual turnover or revenues. Now, this is just what, a few years later, they'll probably be at $24 million.
Goodness, that's remarkable.
So you say, well, could it be bigger? Could it be better, faster? That's pretty solid. And they just continue to grow at the level they can. And this is what we see all the time, is that this is the whole idea. Here's the vision, and what are we going to do it this year? Principle number 12 is never give up.
Again, that's a very favorite attribute that I see in some of my mentors as well, is this incredible grit and determination and the ability to just to really hang in there. Steve, I have a concept that echoes in my mind. I've never really articulated it, but I think it will fit in with what we're talking. We'll soon find out. My concept and theory and hypothesis is that the growth of an organization will never outstrip the growth of a leader. And for me, my observations of people I've worked with, people I've been able to observe, and indeed in my own life, is that oftentimes I'm the bottleneck or the owner is the bottleneck. Is that something that resonates with you?
Totally, really. A leader has a tremendous influence on an organization, and the organization often is the extension, the shadow of that leadership. So I think that's well put what you just said. You may have leaders within the organization itself that there's pockets of excellence because they apply this. But what happens is when you have a leader, the top person starts doing this and they change their mindset, they start seeing at a different level and build skills that match it, great results follow. And this is where the idea, great leaders produce great results. We see that over and over again. And that is why it's so important, like you said, is that we're never too old to work on becoming our best. Because one of the biggest risks is you sell yourself short of what you could really do. And so the real question is, what are we really capable of? And another one of the principles is to apply the power of knowledge. So listening to podcasts, reading books regularly. A friend of mine, Charlie Jones, once said, you'll be the same today in 5 years from now as you are today, except for two things, the books you read and the people you meet. We want to nurture this excellence, this becoming your best, by continuing to learn and put good people in our pathways.
Steve, I really love everything you say because, and I'm sounding obviously incredibly enthusiastic. I was fortunate enough to have a mentor in my early 20s, mid-20s, who encouraged me an incredible amount and set me on a path and on a journey. And so a lot of the things that you're saying, I've got a little voice in the back of my head going, yes, this is so true, and you've seen it in action and so on. So I'm feeling very much aligned with those thoughts. But for people who may not be as familiar with this line of thinking, I guess the question that I just want to ask on behalf of those people is, can anyone do this? Is this something that anyone can do, or is it genetically bestowed upon a few? Is this something that anyone can pick up and apply?
You know, in our seminars, what we do, Jess, is frequently, not always, I'll ask people, okay, if you're a leader, raise your hand. And at first, not all the hands go up. And I said, okay, let's think about this again. I'd like to suggest every single one of you is a leader. If nothing else, you're leading your own life. But if you really think about it, the answer is yes, we are all leaders. And yes, the 12 principles, these things that you're hearing that your mentors taught you, this is not about Steve Schallenberger, I assure you. The power is in the principles. And they are as predictable as night and day. They are as predictable as gravity. These are laws that govern the outcome. And so every time you lead with a vision, you get to a better place. Every time you manage with a plan and set annual goals, your mind now is starting to think about excellence. It is a predictable result, and especially if you do it in the various areas of your life. And then you have to have a way where the rubber meets the road and you consistently do what matters most. Now, we haven't talked about that aspect of it today, so you're spot on. One of the principles is live the golden rule in business and in life. The very fundamental to creating a high performance culture is how we treat people. So is that helpful? In other words, yes, The question is, how do you really develop the competency and build the skills? Once it's being aware of what they are, maybe I could tell you just a quick story about Benjamin Franklin.
I would love to hear it.
Benjamin Franklin, one of the world's great leaders, inventors, and in American history, played a huge role in the independence of the United States and the Declaration of Independence. But he happened to be about 80 years old at that time, far older than many of the others. When he was a young man and an apprentice in a print shop, one Friday afternoon, his boss pulled him aside and he said, "You are the most arrogant, know-it-all, obnoxious person I've ever met." He said, "Really, I'm just telling you, Ben, nobody likes being around you." Well, this was quite shocking to Benjamin Franklin, and he went home that weekend and he was totally stung. You know, it hurt. And so what he did to try to resolve this, to improve, he came up with 13 virtues. And he decided to work on a virtue one a week and then go to the next virtue and then the next. And by the end of 13 weeks, he would start over. And 13 times 4 is 52. And he said, "That way I could work on these 13 virtues the rest of my life." And so what we have done is created a computer program that's free to the world. It's used all over the world, where we send out a principle and people can work on principle one. And then the next week, and it gives inspirational stories, action ideas, principle two, lead with the vision. Then the next week, manage with a plan. And the next week, prioritize your time. And you can do this not only individually, but you can do it as an office. And then just rotate, give an assignment to people in the office of who will teach the leadership principle. And by the time you finish 12, you can step back and evaluate on the 13th week, and then you start over. And that way, 13 times 4 is 52, and you can work on them the rest of your life. And one day, guess what, Jess, you wake up and you are different. Something happened. So this is one thing that people can do to become their best, because it's not really a competition about being somebody else's best. It's being your best.
And that, I think, is a really important point. So for anyone listening to the podcast who has just tuned in, we're having a conversation with Steve Schellenberger, and you can find him at becomingyourbest.com. And the point that you've just made there, Steve, is, I think, critical. It's not about being someone else's best. It's about being your best and looking at that person in the mirror every morning and being content and knowing that I'm me. I don't need to be someone else. I've been blessed with a different set of gifts, perhaps even a different set of circumstances, whatever it happens to be, and I don't need to be meeting someone else's definition of great. I've just got to be good for me. So I really resonate with that. And for anyone listening to that particular point right now, I'd say please go back, rewind, and listen to that over and over again, because in dentistry, we often feel the pressure of comparison. How are my peers doing? Should I be doing this? How do I fit in amongst the pegging system of where people might be? And I think that's a fool's game. I think that the person that you need to be happy with is you. And I think, Steve, you've articulated that really beautifully.
Oh, well said, Jess. I'm going to quote that one.
You're more than welcome. I love it. Good job. You are more than welcome to. Steve, you've been incredibly generous with your time, and I'm looking at some of the clients you've worked with here. I mean, this is a who's who, you know, Pepsi, Lux, Dell, YPO, Wells Fargo. I mean, you've worked with some of the big hitters, and it's no wonder that you're so highly regarded. Before, I know it's evening where you are, and before I let you get on with your evening, I do want to ask you a few more questions, if that's okay, because I don't get this opportunity very often to talk with someone like you, and I'm curious to ask you, what has been the most transformative moment of your life?
No one's asked that question before. That's a great question. I think often we find out what we're really made of in adversity. It's one thing to have success, and that's great. It's wonderful. That's a happy time. But when you really have severe adversity, that's where you find out what you're made of. And some of the very best lessons in life come when you go through the most difficult times. My first company, we grew for maybe 12 to 14 years, very quickly, very successfully. And then we had a ginormous financial setback. It was many millions of dollars. And here I was, a fairly young man, and owed a lot of money. The banks were calling the loans in. I'd cross-collateralized everything. And some of the companies were doing very well, but this one was a huge setback, about $10 million. And so all of a sudden, this is a big challenge. And I had to ask myself, well, am I going to just run away from this, move away and let it crash down? Or do I stand up at the plate and do something about it and take it on and try to resolve it? And that's what I decided to do. I remember many nights being up at 2 a.m. trying to figure out how I was going to make payroll within 2 days. How was I going to come up with $40,000? And if this became public, would it be a total humiliation to be a failure? And I found myself on my knees many of those nights seeking help. And one night I finally, this is after a couple of years, and I just said, Heavenly Father, you know what? This is, I'm giving it my best, but it's not working very well. So I am putting this into thy hands, and I'll work as hard as I can. And I ask for thy help. But if it doesn't, my life is in thy hands. Wherever it goes, it goes. And at that moment, peace came into my heart and my body, my soul. And it's never left. That's been many years ago. And I made it through that situation. It took 7 years to satisfy every obligation, but it changed me virtually in every aspect. I led differently. I was so much of a better financial manager, how I dealt with finances, how we set up the growth of our companies, and I still maintain the peace. Well, what I didn't realize is that things would turn out so that they were so far better than I could have ever imagined that they could be. And so I realized that the opposite of success is definitely not failure, because that's what we learn from. And the opposite of success is laying there. It's quitting. It's not getting back up. And so I think from experiences like that, that we learn so much about us and how important friends are and faith and relationships, and that it's okay to have a failure. Among my research, I found that among these 150 presidents, each one of them had on average 4 major failures during their career. On the other hand, they had 7 major successes. And so they just kept at it. So I don't know if that's helpful for listeners, but we're all struggling to make it through, to be happy, to be healthy, to feel satisfied, to have strong relationships, and to have a successful enterprise at the things we do. I think it, when it's all said and done, the things that give us the greatest satisfaction would be those kind of things, making a difference.
Yeah. I love hearing that story, Steve, because I think, firstly, it's the authentic stories that really people resonate with. And I think every person listening to this show will identify and resonate with that, because everyone's had a failure. Everyone's had a setback. Everyone's felt that gut-wrenching sense of, oh my God, what just happened? And so I think the ability to have the failure and to continue on and persist and not give up and quit, I think, is a fundamental, a skill set, mindset for business owners. In that experience, Steve, what did you learn about yourself?
Well, that's a really good question. First of all, the family was young, had a wonderful wife, and so I didn't lose my family. That's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a huge deal.
I was still determined to be a good dad and to try to be a good spouse. So, and I didn't lose my faith either. You know, I didn't turn to things that were destructive. And I ultimately had faith that things would work out. So I think those are really significant things. Keep the things that matter most over the long period. I actually brought in kids and the friends of our kids. We had teenagers at that time. I remember, Jess, I've never told anybody this. It's just coming back. Some of our very best friends, I brought them down to our office in the conference room. And I said, I want to tell you about what's going on with our business. Right now, we're facing failure. We're facing humiliation. And here's what happened. And I want you all to know about it. Fortunately, we were able to pull out of it, but we maybe would have had to file bankruptcy or something else or have something, but it wasn't fraud, that's for sure. You know, I said, you know, that's not the issue here. The issue is we grew too quickly and we didn't have all of our systems in place. And unfortunately, when we thought we were making money, we were losing money. And so now here are the choices we have. I'd like to say one other thing that thank you for having this interview, for bringing up these questions, because while you were talking about this, Jess, the other thing that I was thinking about is what you mentioned a few minutes ago is how important having mentors in your life is. I picked five or six really wonderful, extraordinary mentors who all were amazing in their own right. And these were people that were willing to be of help to me. We hit it off. We created a bond. I learned so much from them, but they also took me under their wing, fortunately. And as a result, this was life-changing, absolutely life-changing. So as I look back, and I'm not done. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm 67. Woohoo! But, you know, I just started another company at 60 and we're cranking. And
good on you.
I've got a lot to do. So I'm planning on working probably for a while because I love it.
And isn't that is what brings the joys. And so when you love it, that's infectious. That's your vision. That's your team in alignment. That's the transformation that you spoke about earlier. That's the ability to leave people better than you found them. And I think that's a really terrific and wonderful gift to be able to give those people that you interact with. So well done you. I think that's fantastic.
Right. And now, Jess, what's happened is these wonderful mentors, one just died last week at 92. Another died a year ago at 90. Stephen Covey died, he was younger, 78 or 79, but another at 88 and another at 91. I mean, I've been so lucky. And so here's the model and another at 92. Oh my goodness. I'm just thinking about this. I've had the good fortune to speak at a lot of their funerals and, or certainly being there with them. That is the next stage as you move in life. And so now a lot of the things I do with my companies is, of course, I'm still focused on applying these 12 principles. What's the vision look like for 3 years, 5 years? But it's also around succession planning. It's being sure that the many others that we're associating with are able to do the same things, because this is how we make it intergenerational.
Yeah, and that's legacy right there. And I think that's like the postcards you're leaving your grandkids. Your work, your body of work will be carried on by those who come after you. And I think that's a great gift. Much like Stephen Covey's work, yours will be too. Stephen Covey's work is carried on today. He's got his son, Stephen Jr., who's continuing that path, and others as well. Same with Zig Ziglar and so on. So again, I think it will be the same for your work as well. Steve, you've been incredibly generous today, evening for you, tonight for you, and I want to say thank you so much, because the conversation that we've been able to enjoy today, I think is going to be possibly one of the most popular podcasts we do, because it touches every element of performance, every element of life. It's about creating meaning, it's about creating passion, and it's about leading with a vision, as you say. So from all of us, I want to express my gratitude to you for taking the time out of your day to share your wisdom, your insights, and your generosity. So thank you, mate.
Oh, you bet. And just a couple of thoughts. First, it's been an honor to be with you. And it's certainly my hope and dream that maybe some of the things we've talked about can be of help and lifts others. So, and you've been a great host, and not only are you a great host, but I've taken the time to learn about you, and you are doing some very cool things. You're blessing people's lives, and you're a great resource. You've identified an industry that's in need of supplemental things. These, like I mentioned before, these are bright, wonderful, good people. But as they gain other skills that you're able to help them with, it helps them to become their best. So I was just thinking, sometimes people say, well, are there any resources you have? We recently came out with something called a personal productivity assessment. And it's a way to kind of start thinking about the principles and doing a little benchmarking in your own life. This is also something that's free to the world. They can just go on our website and it'll pop up. It takes about 5 minutes to take, but it may be of interest for people and helps get that ball rolling.
I think that'd be a wonderful resource, and we are definitely going to put some links to that in the show notes. I would also recommend the Be Your Best Planner. Become Your Best Planner. That looks like an incredibly important tool. I've certainly pre-ordered mine for the 2019 calendar year. I would recommend that to our audience as well, because I think that will be useful in amongst all the other books and resources as well. So please do head across to becomingyourbest.com, guys, because as always, there's just some wonderful resources there, and I thank you. That's terrific. Steve, once again, you are incredibly gracious, you're incredibly kind, and you're incredibly wise. We thank you, we salute you, and we look forward to seeing you down in Australia.
Okay, that's a deal, and it's been an honor, and best to you, Jess.
Okay, thank you, mate. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.